For the past 7 years, the Bush administration has received rather constant criticism for its approach to science and scientists. Even though it may not be a major talking point on the campaign trail, the next president will be faced with whether to continue or reverse the current administration's policies on issues like stem cell research, climate change, and space exploration. Joining me now is Chris Mooney, the Washington correspondent for Seed magazine and the author of two books on the politics of science. Welcome to our show.
Good to be here.
When President Bush leaves office, what do you think his legacy will be when it comes to science?
Pretty negative. You could say that the relationship between politics and science in the United States in the post-World War II period reached its lowest point under George W. Bush.
Do you think the administration has a guiding science philosophy?
Yeah, don't let science get into conflict with what they want to do otherwise.
And is it really a matter of conflict, or is it a matter of science to some degree not reflecting other ideas that they have?
I think we're saying the same thing. In other words, if inconvenient science comes along, or especially if inconvenient science is coming out of one of your own federal agencies, try to control the message. Try to make sure that that science doesn't just get out there and knock the president off of what he wants to talk about that day. Rather have some political people change the content of the science, prevent maybe a government scientist from speaking to the media. These kinds of things have all happened over the course of the Bush administration.
And where is it? In what area has it been most obvious?
I think it's changed over the course of the administration, but increasingly in the past 3 years, climate change has been the biggest politicized science issue that we have.
And why do you think they are not going along with what the great majority of scientists are saying in regards to climate change?
Well, actually, we need an update on that. I would say that through the first 6 to 7 years of the administration, Bush was out of whack with scientific consensus, and I would have categorized him as a, quote, global warming skeptic. At least a lot of the things that he said and a lot of the administration's actions were consistent with that. I think the issue has now recently become so high profile, so urgent. There's been such a change, a sea change in public opinion, media attention to this. I think the Bush administration is finally sort of coming along.
Is it possible to avoid politics when it comes to making national panel appointments?
Not probably entirely, but it depends entirely on what kind of appointments we're talking about here. The scientific community got outraged when it came to picking scientists to sit on committees that provide exclusively technical advice to various aspects of government, and you really shouldn't be picking those people based upon political criteria. If you're talking about the head of an agency at the cabinet level, I can see why politics would filter in more.
But even there, haven't many scientists been outraged by some of the appointments?
Sure, I'm just saying that politics is more defensible and more understandable at the sort of highest echelons on the president's cabinet level than it is understandable when you're talking about in a committee that's advising the Food and Drug Administration about whether or not a drug is safe.
We spoke earlier to Michael Gerson, the former chief speechwriter for President Bush, and he says that the Bush administration made generous donations to the fight against HIV/AIDS in Africa. Isn't that one of the areas where the administration should be applauded?
Sure. Well, no one's saying that everything that they've done is bad. And in fact, when it comes to the funding of science, it sounds like he's talking about a sort of humanitarian initiative rather than research, hard science research. But also, you know, when it comes to the funding of science, the Bush administration has certainly released a lot of money towards science, just as every administration has, although some scientists are unhappy with particular funding priorities. That's not where the so-called war on science that I and others have denounced has really made itself felt. Where it has made itself felt is when it comes to communicating scientific information from the presidency, the podium of the presidency, and the agencies of the government to the public on a select set of controversial issues that knock the president off message or where the science is in contradiction to what his policy agenda was.
So we read in the New York Times that a scientific report has been edited to eliminate all sorts of things that that would have really changed the whole focus of the piece.
Yeah, that's the kind of game that we've seen repeatedly played throughout the course of the administration. That is what has driven the outrage of the scientific community, which is built up. It sort of first burst out in 2004, and they really haven't gotten any happier since then, except now Bush does seem to at least acknowledge that humans are causing global warming.
Has America's role as a science superpower been compromised as a result?
Well, I think we have to make some distinctions here. I mean, America is still the leading scientific research and innovation nation in the world. Some scientists and some leaders of industry are concerned that our competitiveness may fall off. You have some sort of growing science superpowers like India and China, and the question is, how will the United States remain competitive when they're able to produce so many more PhDs and that type of thing? That dialogue is starting to happen. The war on science that we're talking about under Bush is a different thing, and it doesn't involve as much the direction of scientific research or innovation in the United States as it involves the translation of science into policymaking action and the communication of science from the government to the public, again, on a select set of controversial issues. But they're the ones that kind of matter most.
My guest is Chris Mooney, Washington correspondent for Seed Magazine, the author of The Republican War on Science and Storm World. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Hasn't the Bush administration encouraged the privatization of science?
I'm not sure exactly what you mean. We have a large public investment in science, and the Bush administration has pretty much carried on with that. If you take something like the government climate change science program, there's still plenty of money going from that program to all types of scientific research. But the scientific community's objections are that there's been politicization of the program, that the Bush administration quashed doing a major study on the impacts of climate change on the United States, which it should have been doing, which it was legally required to do. So it's more the science on the surface, it seems to be going forward, but when you look at what's actually happening within the agencies, there's been the changing of documents, there's been the president himself putting out misinformation. So it's a tricky picture, and it doesn't centrally affect funding as much as it affects the content.
Well, in the case of stem cell research, it has affected funding because much of the research these days is being funded through private sources, isn't it?
Oh, in that sense, I guess I can see what you mean. Sure, on the stem cell issue, it started, again, with misinformation, with the president standing up before the nation in 2001 and claiming that his stem cell policy would allow research to go forward on more than 60 genetically diverse embryonic stem cell lines, which sounded like it was being generous to the scientific community and sounded like it was unleashing public funding. But, of course, that was just false. There weren't so many lines. The president should have known. He should have gotten himself better informed before he based his policy on misinformation. And then, of course, it turned out that because of the misinformation in part, funding was much more curtailed than it sounded like it was going to be. No, at this point, I think the stem cell policy is really ready to topple. There's now bipartisan agreement that research funding should be expanded, and it's only the Bush administration being unwilling to admit error here that is preventing us from having more expanded research opportunities. I expect the next president, whoever it is, will reverse Bush's executive order on stem cell research.
So you expect to see a major change, whether it's a Democrat or a Republican who wins the next election?
I expect to see a significant change. I'm really expecting and hoping that the Bush administration will be the low point for science and politics, the relationship between the two in the United States. And in the modern day, we simply cannot have these two incredibly important spheres being so divorced and so at war with each other as they have been over the course of the administration. I think that Republicans themselves are coming around on global warming. Even President Bush is coming around on global warming. Everyone is now almost accepting that it's human cause and we've got to do something about it. The stem cell decision that Bush took in 2001, again, as I said, it's pretty much ready to topple, and that is bipartisan. I mean, you know, more Democrats support a change than Republicans do, but a lot of Republicans support a change. So these issues, I think, are shifting, and I don't think it will be as bad as it was over the last 7 years.
In the past, engineers and scientists came from all over the world to work in America. Has it been harder because of our immigration policies for that to continue?
Yeah, this is one of the scientific community's central concerns about the administration as well. It's not about the integrity of science, but rather about the post-9/11 security policies that have in some cases prevented top-notch scientists from other countries from having as free access to the United States as the scientific community would hope for them to have. And that's just another of the many areas where there has been discontent.
I'm assuming that some countries like South Korea, high-tech economies will benefit or have been benefiting from this. Has there been a reverse brain drain? Have American scientists been going elsewhere where there's more money available for their research?
Well, you hear murmurs about that, and I don't have any figures on it, but certainly it's the case that, and this is the stem cell field where this really comes up in particular, we have not been as generous with embryonic stem cell public funding from the U.S. government, although states have stepped it up in the gap left by the government.
Well, some states. New Jersey just turned it down.
Yeah, but California put a ton of money into it, and other states are doing it so as well, and so that's kind of picking up the slack. But other countries, you know, Singapore, South Korea, a number of others see a huge opportunity here to innovate and hopefully generate economic growth through scientific research. And they know that there's a strong correlation between the two. And so they're going to fill the gap, and they don't have the kind of moralistic battle that we have in this country over it. So they're going to benefit. And the question is, how much will we have lost over the course of these 8 years?
What about other emerging science issues that the next president will have to deal with, like the implications of more frequent genome sequencing and the diminishing influence of NASA, the rise of private space travel?
There's just so many of them, it's hard to even know where to begin. You know, one that's been coming up lately in the scientific community, and I hope that this doesn't become a mega debate in the next 48 years, but it might, is geoengineering. In other words, if we cannot stop global warming or slow it down by capping emissions, because it turns out to be happening much faster than we can control or even than we predicted, should we start messing with the planet more to try to reverse the effects? Should we start trying to deflect sunlight away from the Earth or something like that? Scientists are talking seriously about that now. They're so worried about global warming. And the question is, if this ever becomes a serious policy decision, it again underscores why we have to have good scientific information going to our leaders. And that has not been what is happening, unfortunately, under Bush.
And this is not something that the candidates are talking about. In fact, Al Gore didn't talk much about all of this when he was running for president, even though this was a concern, because his advisors suggested that the American public would not understand or would be bored or wouldn't really affect their vote. Do you think that the presidential candidates have largely neglected talking about what their science policy would be?
Yeah, to a large extent, with some exceptions. Hillary Clinton devoted the 50th anniversary of Sputnik in October to talking about science. And she gave a major speech at the Carnegie Institution on what her science policies would be and outlined a lot of things that would be in stark contradiction to the problems that have occurred under the Bush administration. And I think that a lot of the Democrats would have consistent science policies with hers, but they haven't drawn as much attention to it. Part of that is the scientific community itself is not very good and engaging with politicians and asking them to speak out about science. Why didn't the leading organizations of science host a presidential discussion on the subject?
Was Bill Clinton a good president for science?
I think the scientific community remembers him as such, certainly when they do the contrast with George W. Bush. You know, in terms of the luminaries of the science presidents, we still hearken back to Eisenhower and Kennedy, who brought science advice in a major way into the White House for the first time, and the relationship was really at a high level then, and I think a lot of people think it has since declined.
Some people fault Bill Clinton for not making the Kyoto Protocols an issue and at least bringing them up for a vote.
Right, and you could fault Al Gore as well, and you know, it turns out that Kyoto was just not, the nation wasn't ready for it at that time. There was a shot across the bow from the Senate, something like a 96-0 vote saying that they would not ratify it. So Kyoto was sort of dead in the water when Gore and his people working with him came back with the treaty. And it's really too bad that it turned out that way. But now we've got to think post-Kyoto. Kyoto, the United States is not going to join, I think, at least until there's another president. And by then, Kyoto will have almost run its course. It ends by 2012. So now we need something stronger, even faster.
Do you think that creationism and intelligent design has pretty much been eliminated from the discussion unless Mike Huckabee becomes president?
Well, you know, the thing with the evolution battle in the United States is it never quite goes away. And if you look at the history of it, we've had creationists fighting over the content of biology education for something like 100 years. And what happens is you have a court, it builds up, it reaches a crescendo with a court case, which is what we had in 2005 in Dover, Pennsylvania, and then the creationists are defeated, and then it goes away, and then they find some new way of attacking evolution, and again builds up to a court case. So I'm expecting that we'll be hearing more soon enough.
We've been talking with Chris Mooney, Washington correspondent for Seed Magazine, the author of The Republican War on Science and Storm World. Thank you so much for being with us.
Great to have been here.